We're doing Parshat Matot. In many ways, Parshat Matot is the conclusion of the Torah. Because after Matot, you have Maseh, which is a recounting of where we've traveled. It's really an overview, Maseh. And then all of Devarim is an overview of what happened beforehand. So, pretty much the conclusion of the stories of the Torah is here in our Parsha. In the end of Maseh, you have a little bit the story of the two tribes, Reuven, Gad, half the tribe of Menashe, and the parasha ends with the Shiduchim, but basically, we're up to the end. That's it. Matos, Maaseh, and then the Book of Devarim, which is a review. Matos begins with the responsibility to maintain one's vows. The Torah tells us that a woman can have her vows annulled by her husband, or when she's younger, by her father. There's something called hafarat neder, where the husband can say, I don't want this null to be relevant, and from that point onward it is irrelevant. There are two conditions. Number one is that it's on the day he hears it, and that he hasn't validated it. Let's say the wife says, you brood, I swear I'm never showering again. And he says, fine, enjoy. And then he says, 2 minutes later, he says, actually, no. I don't want you, of course you should shower. Too late. Once he validated the vow, they got to go to a rabbi, figure out how they get out of this. He can't annul it once he's validated it. But if on the same day he hears it, he annuls it, that works, provided the second condition is that it's a vow that pertains to him. She says, I'm not going to shower for a month, that pertains to him. She says, I'm not going to make food for your kids for the next year, that pertains to him. So a vow that's relevant between him and her, so that's a vow which he can annul, from the minute he annuls it onward, the vow is annulled. Yes?
The term there, something nafsho or something, the word, is that what that is?
Yeah.
What was the word
again? Inui nefesh?
Inui nefesh, that's what means pertaining to
him. Beino leveina. Because it says, v'isha, when a woman takes a vow, so it says, v'im beit isha nadara, I got to find the wording, but it's we darshan it's dafka nedarim that are beino leveina. Tara le anot nafesh. Yeah. Okay. Yes.
What gives him the right to nullify
that? The Torah. We have to know there's a neder and a shvua. Neder means this animal should be a sacrifice. That's a neder. A person takes a vow and says, he will bring an olah sacrifice. That's a neder. Person says, this cup of water should be prohibited on me like a sacrifice. That's a neder. Notice that neder is object-oriented. We say, this object should be prohibited to me like something holy. That's a neder. Shavua is a vow. I swear I will eat supper tonight. I swear I won't sleep tonight. A shavua is a vow. So there's neder and shavua where the shavua focuses on the person. We are not supposed to take vows. Even if you keep your vow, it's a bad thing to take a vow. If a person swears or takes a neder, that's improper. When we bring sacrifices, so then just before we sacrifice, we dedicate the animal. By taking on that vow, that gives the animal a holier status. But ordinarily, a person is not supposed to make a neder or a shvua, tova shalotido. It is better that you do not take on a vow than taking on a vow. And ultimately, maybe you won't pay up. And even if you do pay up, it's wrong to take on vows. A person should not be a person who takes on a vow. If a person did vow, then he should go to a rabbi, because there are ways of, we look for ways to annul a vow, because it's a bad thing if a person takes on a vow. It's not a good thing. That brings us to Sheni. God tells Moshe, take revenge from the Midianites, and after that you're going to die. So Moshe could have said, okay, I'll get that God, and waited about 300 years and prolonged his life. He doesn't do that. Right away, Moshe tells the people, I want 1,000 people from each tribe. Corresponding to that, I want 1,000 people praying, meaning for each person out at war, there was supposed to be one person praying. And then we will go and attack Midian. He sends them for some guerrilla warfare. God says, harm them for what they've done to you. They go out and they destroy them. They demolish the Midianites. That was not on the agenda. And they destroy, they completely demolish the 5 kings of Midian. Evi rekem tzur hu reva. If you guys like riddles, a good riddle is, where do we find a Jew and a non-Jew who have the same name? Both were killed by Jews. The answer is Hur. Hur was the Midianite king. He was killed by Jews, right, in this week's parasha. And Hur was also Miriam's son, who was killed by Jews during the Egel. So Hur.
Did you say that was a joke?
A riddle.
Oh, really?
Yes.
When it lists the names, so these were the ones who were killed, and these were the slain ones. Are they the kings?
Yes, those were the kings. Evi Rekem Tzur Hur Reva. Tzur, it was his daughter, Kozbi Vas Tzur, who went there to seduce. So they destroyed these cities and they brought in the loot. And Moshe and Elazar go out to greet them because they're all defiled from the war. And Moshe looks at them and they bring the girls back. And Moshe says, wait a second, those are the girls that caused the Jews to sin. What are you bringing them back for? So then we have two interesting things. We have the laws of purifying themselves. They come back from war, so they have to purify themselves and the vessels, and then the Torah goes into the laws of kashering vessels. If you have a vessel made of gold or silver, copper or metal or lead, so those vessels have to be koshered before you can use them, and they have to be immersed in water. So we learn two halachot here. Number one, when a metal instrument or even an earthenware instrument is used with a food item, so then it absorbs from that food item when you use it in hot, when you boil, when you cook, or when you bake, or when you roast. So then the objects absorb. So if you're going to go to a park and you want to use the public grill over there, you have a problem. You say, I'll scrub off, I'll bring my own grate. Okay, that might be okay, but if I'm going to scrub off the public grate, my problem is that that grate absorbed from the fats that were there. So if it's my own grill, it absorbed kosher fats. But if it's a public grill, I have no idea what it absorbed. It absorbed the Franks from Ben and Jerry's, whatever. You know, the last guy who made their Franks or whatever meat he made there. So I have a problem that we say that heat causes things to absorb flavor. So if I have a pot, I go to a garage sale, I buy a pot, I have a problem, that pot absorbed. If I have a frying pan, I have a problem. If I have a spoke that's used for roasting, I have a problem, they absorbed. We say there are different ways in which things absorb. There's absorbing through dry heat, that's baking. There's absorbing through direct heat, that's roasting. There's absorbing through cooking, through water, through liquid, that's cooking. So we have three types of absorption. Again, we have dry heat, baking. That's like the floor of an oven. You're baking bread, right? If you buy trays, oven trays, people bake challah on those trays, or people might bake their cookies on those trays. So that's one way of absorption, dry heat. Then you have direct heat, where the fire is on the spoke and on the meat. So that's direct heat. That's tzliya, that's roasting. And then you have cooking through a liquid. We say kiboleo kach poleto. The same way something absorbs, that's the way it gives out its flavor. So you first scrub the item clean. There should be no more food on it. And then if it's a pot, you wait 24 hours. You wait till the... We say that after 24 hours, the flavor goes bad in the walls. And then your kashering works. So you wait your 24 hours and then you use the pot, you fill the pot to the top, or even better, you put the pot in a larger pot and you bring the water to a boil and that pot gets cooked. So what do you do if you're in a new apartment and you have a countertop? So some countertops can be kashered and some cannot. Assuming your countertop may be kashered, some countertops are made of materials that are like earthenware. They're made of earth and they absorb and they don't give out their flavor. So if you would pour boiling water on it, so that's not the same effect of heat as bubbling water. By the time the water hits the countertop, it's poured. It's called irui kli rishon. It's poured from the vessel in which it was cooked. Whereas sometimes you have a boiling hot pot, you put it down on the counter, the water under it bubbles, or you take out bread, or you take out meat if you want to cut the meat on the countertop. So that meat was itself is boiling hot on the countertop. So one of the things we do is we would pour the boiling water and then go over it with an iron. Be careful not to electrocute yourself. You go over it with an iron, and the iron is red hot, and it brings the water to a boil. Assuming it's a countertop that can be kashered, that's one of the ways we would do that. Or the insert of a sink. Again, you have to be careful that the water shouldn't go too high, don't electrocute yourself, etc. But there are ways of doing that in which we bring the water to a boil, even in difficult circumstances. The ideal way is we take a larger pot and we put the smaller pot inside it. And then you bring that to a boil, or you bring it to a boil, and then you insert the pot, and then the pot from all sides is being boiled. Our problem is that sometimes a pot runneth over. And then that boiling pot absorbs from the outside too, or over the top. That's why we want it encased on all sides. Again, we want to clean it off before we do that. If we want to kasher in oven, what's the problem with kashering in oven? So again, I have dry heat. So the racks are my main problem, because the racks are where I put the food that's being absorbed. My problem is also that food emits a mist, and that mist is going all around the oven. Some of the ovens here in Israel, most of the ovens are coated with email. Email is, again, very often treated like earthenware. So each person has to ask the local Orthodox rabbi if you could actually kasher the walls of an oven. Okay, so if I have a spoke, an oven spoke, so how do I kasher that? So I need to bring it to heat. I got to get it red hot. And then kibole o kachpoto, just like it absorbed through direct fire, it can emit, it can actually burn the flavor inside with contact with direct fire. We do that with a blowtorch or a self-cleaning oven. Those who have a self-cleaning oven, so the oven reaches a heat that's called libun. So when we speak about libun, bringing something to the heat where we say the flavor is burnt inside, ordinarily libun means that it's so hot that sparks are flying out of it. Our metals today don't give off sparks from anything. But we have different temperatures that we assume is libun chomor, and that's, again, a self-cleaning oven reaches that temperature. So you could do that. A word to the wise, frying pans are problematic, because a frying pan is often considered like dry heat, because the frying pan, very often the oil in the frying pan dries out and things get burnt onto the pan directly without any liquid. So then how would I have to kasher that? With a blowtorch, with dry heat. Go put a blowtorch to Teflon, you melt the whole thing. That's why frying pans, you should ask your local Orthodox rabbi, because they're not so easy to kasher, frying pan. Yes?
I was told that you would just like put it on the fire and wait that it's way, way hot.
Each case depends on what we're talking about. You know, it depends on what happened with the pan. Okay, then we come to the laws of Tvilas Kelim. It says over here that the vessels, the metal vessels, have to go in mikveh water. B'mei nidayit chata. Water that a nida would go in. So what's Tvilas Kelim? If you purchase a vessel made out of glass or one of the metals from a non-Jew, and it is a vessel that is used in the manufacturing of food, you use it for cooking, for baking, and it comes in direct contact with the food, so then that vessel has to go in the mikveh water. So, a fork, a knife, a spoon, a plate. What about Corel plate? So we assume Corel is coated with glass. Our earthenware today is coated with glass. So we would tovel those as well. In the United States, people are lenient, based on Rav Moshe's opinion, that the earthenware has only a thin layer of glass, and that doesn't constitute a vessel. But here in Israel, people tovel their earthenware, because the earthenware is coated with that thin layer of glass, and their Corel, etc., those they do immerse in mikveh waters. So the things that are obviously obligated are metal vessels. So you buy a new challah knife, you have to tovel it. What happens if you buy it from Achim Chadad? So they made it. These Yemenite Jewish fellows, they made the knife, so you don't have to tovel it. It's only if you bought it from a non-Jew. There is a medrash that says that when a person does giyur, he himself has to tovel his own vessels, because his vessels were in his possession before he was Jewish, and now they went into his possession as a Jew. Not everyone agrees you have to do that, but many people do. So right after their gear, they go and they tovel their vessels. When you tovel a vessel, when you put it in the mikveh waters, it has to be completely clean. What happens if you have a sticker on the bottom that says made in China? Well, if you're going to leave that sticker on, you know, for the next 7 months, that's okay. Then it's like part of the vessel. But if you're going to take it off, next time you scrub the vessels, then you got to take it off before you immerse it in the mikveh waters. Where we run into trouble is with a serrated knife. Serrated knives will very often have food stuck inside, and that's very hard to clean. So if you have a serrated knife that's used and you have to tovel it, that can get tricky. Yes? I didn't hear you, I'm sorry. Pure iron pots? Kashering them would be the same, saying depending on what they were used for. Either, and then immersing them in a mikveh is also the same. When you immerse it, you immerse the whole vessel at once. The whole vessel has to be in the water, and we let go for a split second. And then the whole vessel is in the water for that split second. If you're buying a hand blender, if you're buying one of those heating elements to heat water, so those have to be immersed in a mikveh because they come in direct contact with the food. What about a toaster? So the toaster does not. I'm saying an American toaster where you have a rack, you put the bread on it, right? So the rack has to go to the mikveh because the bread is on the rack. The bread doesn't come in contact with the coils. What happens if you're buying a hot water urn? So there are those like the electrochanan, the ones that are like a jug. So those people have, I have a friend who toiveled over 200 of them. He was a mashgiach in a hotel. And he said, you just put them on the roof for 2 or 3 days to dry and they're fine. But my experience was I had a Shabbos one of those big ones, and I toiveled it and it got destroyed. So there's another way to do it. I should have waited longer for it to dry, but the technician I brought it to said it wouldn't have helped, that I destroyed it when I toiveled it. So there's another thing which people often do, and there are halachic opinions which approve of it, and that is to bring it to a technician to take it apart. A technician takes off a part and then puts it back in, so then technically he removed it from the status of being a vessel, he made it not usable, and then he recreated it, he put it back in the status of a vessel, and now it's a vessel that was created by a Jew. So a vessel created by a Jew doesn't need immersion. The whole reason you have to immerse it in a mikveh is because it was purchased from a non-Jew to a Jew's possession. So in summation, we said, vessels that come in direct contact with food have to be clean, they have to be made out of one of the metals or glass, then we tovel them in a mikveh. The whole vessel has to go into the mikveh. You let go for a split second. You make a bracha before you tovel it. If it's one vessel, the tvok al tvilat kli. If it's multiple vessels, al tvilat kelim. You tovel it in the mikveh waters. The whole vessel has to be in the water. If it is a vessel that will get ruined in the water, so then there are those opinions that say it's enough to take out a component, bring it to the technician, take out a component, he puts it back in, and then it doesn't require tevila. Tevila is only required when it was purchased from a non-Jew for the sake of using. So if you're buying a challah knife for your best friend's wedding, he has to tevil it. You can't tevil it because you didn't buy it for use. You bought it to pass it on. Otherwise, all the Jewish store owners would have to tovel all the vessels they buy. Why don't they have to tovel the vessels? Because they didn't buy them for use. They couldn't tovel it if they wanted to. You could only tovel it if you use it. What happens if you're stuck? It's Friday afternoon, and it's your Sheva Brachos. And suddenly you realize that all the dishes you're about to use are not toveled. So what do? So you go to your buddy who's in the gear department and you say, buddy, look, I value you and I love you and you're great and I need you to do me a big favor and promise me I won't hurt your feelings. I really don't want to hurt your feelings, but you can help me now where no one else can. If I could sell you my objects right now for this Shabbos right now, if they belong to a non-Jew, they're not chayv in tevila. So long as they belong to a non-Jew, they're not obligated in tevila. Only when they come back to my possession do I have to do tevila. So that's a trick we sometimes do if we're stuck in a corner in a tight spot and you really have no choice. But it has to be like that. Lechatchila, you take your vessels, you tevil them, and then you use them. One should not use a vessel that requires tevila before teviling. If you didn't tevil it, you shouldn't use it. What about your pocket knife? Depends on what you use your pocket knife for. If you primarily use it for whittling or something else, that's okay. Even though sometimes you'll use it for food. But if you primarily use it on your hiking trips to cut your meat and cut your fish and cut your fruits, so then your prime use of that knife is for food. So then that knife is chayav tevila. Can we tovel in a stream? Well, if that stream is primarily from rainwater, then no. Because mikveh has to be standing water. If that stream comes from under the ground, so then stream water is kosher. Stream water can move so long as it's from an underground source. If it's from rainwater, if it's from snows that melted, then that's not a kosher mikveh, not for a person to toivel, nor for toiveling a vessel. We should merit to have many beautiful vessels and do many beautiful things with them. I'll see you guys Thursday.